Welcome to Local Talk, a show that explores the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today on KHOI Community Radio, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tom Beal.
Hi, Ursula. Glad to be here with you.
Tom, if you had to pick three things in Iowa that starts with the letter P, what would you pick?
Well, of course, politics for one. We are first in the nation for presidential candidates.
I should have known you'd say that, Tom. You are most certainly right. I would like to add poetry. More poet laureates are connected to Iowa than any other states. Most of them have studied here.
So what's the third?
I don't know. What do you think? We've got poetry. We've got politics. This one begins with a P also. It's pigs, of course. And we've got all three on the show this morning. Politics, pigs, and poetry. Although not in that order. For most of the show, we'll be discussing a recent application for a local hog confinement, or a CAFO, that has been recommended for construction by the Story County Supervisors last month. And to explore what's happened there, we'll be talking with Margaret Janes of Story County Environmental Health, Evan Berger of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, and Mr. Paul Toot, Chair of the Board of the Story County Supervisors. But to start off, let's hear about a cultural event that's coming in Ames.
Poetry?
Yep. There's a reading being held at Della Vitti Wine Bar this Thursday night at 7 p.m. And what makes this reading special is that the readers are all published by a local press. Mr. Jason Argabast is here with us this morning. Welcome, Jason. You are one of the people who will be reading at the poetry and prose reading?
Yeah, and I should mention that I'll be reading prose. I'm mostly a fiction writer. Red Orchid, though, publishes everything from prose to poetry to children's books also.
Who else?
Melanie Henson, who's the publisher who runs Red Orchid Publishing, and also Laura Sweeney, who was one of the playwrights that put together the Farmscape Reader's Theater that a lot of people may be familiar with.
Tell us a little bit about the publishing house, Jason.
Red Orchid was founded less than a year ago, I believe. And its main purpose is to get out voices that might not be heard otherwise. It uses mostly the internet to market and distribute the books. And the editors are also authors as well as working as editors on the publishing house. So we've got quite a bit of experience as far as working within the writing industry.
How do you promote your new titles?
I personally pound the pavement quite a bit. I talk to everybody that I can to try and get it out there. I use as much social media as possible. It's nice that my book being set in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which I lived there for 8 years, I can sort of talk to people back in Kalamazoo that are associated with the city itself. Like I talked to one of the people in charge of the Kalamazoo Historical Society to try and promote the book a little bit.
Tell us a little bit about your book.
It's a crime noir urban fantasy novel. The best way that I can describe it to people is think of the Maltese Falcon, but instead of criminals and mobsters, you've got gods and ghosts and monsters.
In Kalamazoo?
In Kalamazoo, Michigan. I couldn't have come up with a better city name for a fantasy novel if I tried. So I figured since I'm familiar with the city, I might as well set it there and go to town.
For me, the most familiar reference to Kalamazoo is I've got a gal in Kalamazoo. Of course, everybody who lives there knows that
song. All the big band music. I actually had a teacher once when I was at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. He and his wife at the time went over to Ireland on a trip back in like 93. And everybody, when they heard that he was from Kalamazoo, they're like, oh, like in the song. And he's like, what? Yeah, big band back in World War II. And so they were singing that all night long. He drank for free the entire night because there are all these older people from
Kalamazoo.
Sioux City Sioux probably has the same success for people up there. Could I ask you, have you had one of your books published conventionally, let's say printed, and then how would you compare that with an e-book?
I had a short story collection published through Main Street Rag Publishing called Lost and Found in Kalamazoo, which stories are also set in Kalamazoo, about 7 years ago. And it was also small press. Right now, Red Orchid Publishing is considered small press. And the experiences are very similar. But I think that now it's much easier to publish something with mostly online marketing and through online press just because social media and everything has grown just tremendously in the past, you know, 8 years.
How long has Red Orchid Press been around in Ames?
They've just started. It's our first book came out, I want to say, 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now, God, I don't know how many titles are out. The big push was to have 30 titles available by right about now. And I think that we're really close. If you go to redorchidpublishing.com, there's pretty close to 30 titles.
Okay. So that's redorchidpublishing.com. Yep. So tell us just real quickly again about the event that's going to be happening this week.
Thursday, tomorrow at 7 o'clock, there will be a reading. Melanie will be reading, I believe, some of her prose. Laura Sweeney will be reading a few pieces of poetry that she's had published nationally. Lately, she's got something hopefully coming out in Appalachia within the next couple months, which is a pretty well-known journal. And I'll be reading an excerpt from my novel and possibly a short story from my short story collection. I've had stuff that's been appearing in Tunes lately. I've been trying to do a regular column for there that'll hopefully run for the summer. And I might read one of the shorter pieces that I've had published in there.
And what time does it start?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. And it's at Delaviti?
Delaviti, just down the street from here. It's 323 Main Street. They actually, I think, just opened about a year ago. It's been a little over a year. They're Iowa's only self-serve wine bar, as far as I know.
Uh-huh.
It's really, really nice in there.
Again, that's on Thursday, which is tomorrow, mm-hmm. at 7 o'clock at Delaviti. And
yep.
It'll be a poetry and prose reading
mm-hmm.
by the authors from Red Orchid Publishing.
Yep. And just a reminder, it is a wine bar, so you have to be 21 or older to come in.
Uh-huh.
Other than that, though, come in, listen to us read, and enjoy some fine wines. They've got some great wines. I just had some last Friday at the Art Walk, and they're excellent, excellent wines.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and letting us know, and sounds like a really fun event.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't care, what happened to me? And I didn't care, for you. We would zigzag away through the boredom and pain, occasionally glancing up through the rain, wondering which of the buggers to blame. And watching for pigs on the wing.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. For the rest of the show, we are going to be talking about a proposed hog confinement feeding operation, or CAFO, which is being proposed for Milford Township, a few miles northeast of Ames. An application to build a CAFO has been submitted by a farmer, and if approved by the State Department of Natural Resources, will house about 4,600 hogs at a time. On May 27th, just a couple of weeks ago, the Story County Supervisors held a very well-attended hearing about this proposed CAFO that continued for a record 3 hours. And as the Tribune reported, comments on the hearings ran about 2-1 against the CAFO, and 500 Story County residents signed a petition against it. But in the end, there was a recommend made by the Story County Supervisors to go ahead with the CAFO, and the Story County Supervisors makes the recommendation to the Department of Natural Resources. The project was given a passing score by Margaret Jean, the county's Director of Environmental Health. The application is now going to the Department of Natural Resources for approval. The project has drawn attention of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, a grassroots organization, which has long opposed CAFOs for many reasons, and the group has halted plans for nearly 100 other operations over the past two decades, and it is helping to circulate a petition opposing the proposal. So we wanted to take a look at this, and I think we have Mary Jane's on the phone. Is that correct, Rick?
Margaret.
Oh, Margaret. Margaret, my apologies. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for including me.
We really appreciate you joining us for a few minutes. Reading about this issue, one of the main issues is that there's something called a master matrix, which is used to kind of initiate the process of looking at the CAFO. Can you explain what the master matrix is?
Sure. Every year in January, county has the opportunity to pass a resolution which allows us to be included in the review process for these construction permit applications. So they'll come in, and so there's a set of regulations that all CAFOs would have to follow, new CAFOs would have to follow. And then if you're in a county that has a master matrix review, you also have to achieve a number of points based on 44 different options that you can do above and beyond the regular requirements. So those master matrix come in, the applicant chooses the options he wants to do, and then we review the information and pass or fail those each individual steps.
And then that's used, in a sense, as a blueprint for the Board of Supervisors to make some sort of recommendation to the DNR. Is that correct?
That's correct, along with public input. And then also those things that they choose to do to make those points, those items go on the construction permit, and they are required to do it the life of the CAFO.
Okay.
So, for example, if they're going to increase measures for manure management, they would have to do that the life of the permit.
Margaret, what exactly is your role in this process? You are the Director of Environmental Health in Story County. That's correct?
That's correct.
And so what exactly is your role in this process?
Well, to review each and every one and decide whether or not I agree that it meets the requirements of those 44 options. And then take a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, discuss the issues with both sides of the issue. And then we have a public comment period, and I present my findings to the Board of Supervisors, and then they are the ones that decide whether or not they should recommend the construction permit be recommended to DNR for passing.
Now, according to the Tribune, you actually stated that you did not like the placement of this CAFO in relation to the water in the area. Can you explain that?
In my opinion, you know, water quality in this state is is very poor, and these CAFOs, they really are impacting the water quality, in my opinion. Now, it was just a little over 500 feet to Indian Creek, number one problem, and number two, spreading manure in this area. More and more we're getting the tiling, and with the intakes and that, it's just really hard to keep the manure from directly entering those tiles and then directly to the stream. So I think that not just this CAFO, but any CAFO directly impacts water quality.
And yet you, at the end, made a passing score for this. What can you explain? Was there something that changed your mind about it, or what about the process led to you giving it a passing score?
Well, the score is, are they X number of feet from a stream? Yes, they are pass. They, you know, they're not near karst topography. Yes, they pass. So, you know, it's really out of my hands. It's just a yes or a no, they pass or they don't pass. I can't change the data, can't change the information that's there. So they would choose things that they are able to do, and they did.
Margaret,
it's very,
very
easy to pass the master matrix scoring, in my opinion.
It's easy to pass.
Very doable. Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty low bar, really.
I think this is kind of awkward because you've indicated that you're not comfortable with this particular project, and yet the standards, they have met the standards. Was this a legislative set of standards, or was it the legislature that drew these up?
Well, I believe DNR experts. I guess I can't answer that. Who exactly came up with these? You know, in theory, it's a good way to do it. But you know, as any piece of legislation or regulations that pass, there is always compromises and give and takes. And so this is what they came up with to make, you know, everybody happy, so to speak. You know, it's what we have to work with.
It looks like it doesn't make anybody happy, though, because as the article pointed out, about half the people at the hearing spoke out against it rather strenuously. So mm-hmm. clearly they're not happy with the project.
When you make this scoring, do you do this on your own, or do you do this in consultation with the County Board of Supervisors, or what is the process that you actually go through?
My staff and myself for the most part, mm-hmm. and then I also, you know, there's a wealth of information on the DNR's website that I can use as a tool. We go out with DNR and inspect the site. So there's a lot of ways to collect information that we need, mm-hmm. but it's pretty general environmental science, really, when you come right down to it.
Thank you for explaining the process. Obviously, health is an issue for folks in Story County like it is anywhere. And you're saying that basically, in your analysis, this proposal passes the test in terms of whether you consider it as a health risk or not?
They meet the master matrix requirements to pass. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for taking time out this morning to speak with us, and we really appreciate your input.
Absolutely. Thank you for considering this very important subject. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Margaret Janes, the Story County official who gave what really sounds like kind of a barely passing grade to the master matrix for the hog confinement proposal for Milford Township, just a few miles northeast of Ames. We actually did ask the farmer who applied for the permit for the hog confinement operation in question to represent himself this morning on the show, but he declined to come on the show. However, we did find somebody who testified against the operation. We'll take a brief music break while we make the phone call to get in touch with Evan Berger from Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement to talk about that.
So I don't feel alone on the weight of the stone. Now that I've found somewhere safe to bury my bones. And any fool knows a dog needs a home. A shelter from pigs on the wing.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here together with Mr. Tom Beale. And we're talking about hog confinement operations in Iowa, specifically one for Story County, which has been proposed in the last few months. And the Story County supervisors recently gave their approval in a hearing that was held at the end of last month in Milford Township, which is just a few miles northeast of Ames. On the phone now, we have Evan Berger, who testified against the CAFO at the hearing in Nevada. Evan is with the statewide organization Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement and has been in communication with the group of Lucas Chalmond's neighbors. Lucas Chalmond is the farmer who is applying for the operation. A number of neighbors have voiced their opposition to the confinement lot. Welcome, Evan. You with us?
Yeah. Hi, Ursula.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. You are with an organization that is speaking out against this proposal and has actually spoken out against a number of hog confinement proposals in Story County. So what is the case that you're making?
Basically, our position is that these factory farms are a bad deal for everyone involved except for the corporations that are making huge amounts of profit off them. One angle is that there's huge potential for pollution with these things. Basically, they're collecting millions of gallons of manure in massive underground pits and then applying that manure to fields. So Anytime you're concentrating a toxic substance like that, you know, it's has the potential for spills. In fact, that's what we've seen over the last 20 years. There have been 728 manure spills in Iowa. So this is leading to, you know, massively degraded water quality here in the state. You know, anytime you see a beach closing or anything like that, it might be related to factory farm pollution. You know, another angle is the public health angle. These places are basically breeding grounds for antibiotic-resistant bacteria. The hogs are fed low amounts of antibiotics to speed growth. And so it kills off all of the bacteria except for those that, which can resist the antibiotics. So, you know, these are the same drugs that are being prescribed for people, and you know, these diseases can easily be transferred to people as well. One angle that I think a lot of people miss is really the economic angle and how these things are contributing to the rural decline that we're seeing across the state. They've been extremely devastating to the rural economy. You know, instead of 50 farmers each raising 100 hogs, you'll have a single corporate factory farm that raises 5,000 hogs all in one location, and they might employ three or four people. And you know, in addition to that, there's the problem with property values. You know, it's if one of these things moves in next door to you, as a neighbor, you have very little legal recourse, and you know, your property value is going to go right down the toilet. What we really see is, you know, all across the state, you know, small towns are turning into like these ghost towns precisely because of this consolidation of the agricultural economy that's typified in the factory farm industry.
Evan, may I jump in here just for a minute? This is Tom Beal.
Sure.
I was thinking as you were describing the downside of these hoglot confinement operations, how important hogs are to the Iowa economy. Obviously, we need these kinds of or some form of hog raising operation to continue with this important part of our economy. So I guess the question is, can you see any way that these kinds of operations would be acceptable?
You're completely correct that hogs have been a crucial part of Iowa's agricultural economy for, you know, as long as it's been a state. And the difference is that, you know, in the past, like I said, you know, there'd be 50 farmers each with 100 hogs or so, and now there's one operation with 5,000 hogs where all the animals are owned by an out-of-state corporation. I think a sustainable rural economy is one where there's a broad base of many, many medium-sized and small farmers rather than, you know, a few very, very large farmers. This idea of get big or get out, I think, is what's destroying our state. And so, you know, any sort of system where it's broad base of highly diversified farms, I think, would be, you know, and that includes livestock, of course, would be a better alternative to what we're seeing now.
Evan, we just spoke with Margaret Janes, who's with the Environmental Health.
Mm-hmm.
She described the matrix that she scored the CAFO with and giving it a passing grade. Now, she did actually give it a rather lukewarm description in terms of its actual health credibility or not. But I'm wondering what your response was to the score and to that process.
I don't want to get too much into the details. It's, you know, a pretty technical process, so I'll try and keep it simple. But basically what happened with this particular application was the application as originally submitted was extremely incomplete. It lacked a lot of information. It didn't meet legal requirements. So we pointed
this
out.
What do you mean by that?
Sure. So there's a portion of the application called the Master Matrix. This is kind of the county's chance to give some input on the application. And this Master Matrix is a scoring document where out of 880 total points, the applicant fills it out and scores himself on things like how far away he or she is from the nearest neighbor, any sort of aesthetic things they're doing, you know, setting it back from the roadway, planting trees, that sort of thing, and then, you know, how far it is from waterways, that sort of thing. So like I said, there's 880 total points. The applicant must score at least 440. They only have to get 50%. They scored themselves at 515 originally. You know, after, you know, taking a look at it, there were 210 points of those that were wrong. So that brought it down below the 440 threshold.
What do you mean that they were wrong? What does that mean?
So like I said, the applicant scores themselves on this mm-hmm. document. So they did things like, you know, they claimed that they were more than 22,000 feet from the nearest business, when in fact there was a Syngenta office, you know, like a mile and a half or so away. They claimed that they were going to be using a feeding system that significantly reduced manure. when in fact they didn't provide any documentation that the particular feeding system they were using would actually reduce manure volume. They claimed that they were qualified for the family farm tax credit. They did not provide any documentation that they actually received that tax credit. They said they had no history of administrative orders in the last 5 years, when in fact Mashoff Pork, which is which would own all of the hogs at this site and filled out the application for Luke Shellman, when they have had a number of administrative orders in the last 5 years, including a $10,000 fine just this last January. So things like that.
I understand that you deal with this issue statewide. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Can you give us some perspective on how Story County compares to other counties and how they handle CAFO applications?
Well, first, the good thing, to be positive first, one thing that Story County does that other counties don't do is they do notify neighbors when they receive one of these applications. So they send out a letter to everyone within 2 miles of a proposed site, which is good because in a lot of other counties, you won't know that one of these things is going in until they put up the surveying stakes and then it's too late. So that's one good thing that Story County does. And for some history, that only came about because of the organizing by CCI members of 2 years ago around a site that was going to go in near Hickory Grove Park. So this isn't like the supervisors just being nice. This came out of concerted effort by CCI members to institute this policy. So that said, they do that better than other counties. What they don't do better than other counties, and which is an extremely troubling precedent, is that Story County allows applicants to amend their application without notifying neighbors. So in this Shellman site, we pointed out all these errors, we took them to the county, and then the county just turned around and went to the applicant and said, let's figure out a way we can fix all these problems and get this thing passed. They made massive and significant revisions to the amendment or to the application, and then when everyone showed up for the public hearing preparing to testify on the original application, they found, there was an amended application that was posted online an hour and a half ago. So no other county that I've ever worked with allows applicants to amend their application. The process that other counties follow is if the applicant – so the applicant submits an application, they're scored – the county scores them on that application – they recommend denial or approval of the application, and then at that point, if the applicant wants to change his answers, he can resubmit an application and go through the process again. Story County does not follow that broad precedent that other counties have followed.
Tell me if I'm hearing you correctly. What your objection is that the county is acting, in a sense, more as a facilitator instead of as an arbitrator in a case like this?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
That's a very good way of putting it. And, the way we really think about it is we all know from school you can't change the answers on a test after you hand it in. And that's really what Luke did was, he submitted an application, and then he went back and he said, I want to change all my answers and then be graded on these new answers rather than the original one. And other counties say, no, of course not. You can't make these changes. Story County chooses to say, yes, we'll accept these changes and we'll score the amended application. And then, of course, neighbors have no idea of any of these amendments that were made.
This is important to you because you feel that it compromises the objectivity in terms of arbitrating whether a project's a good project. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, for one thing, I think it violates public records law when they're filing an amended application an hour and a half before the public hearing and not telling anyone about it. For another thing, it completely undermines the intent of the master matrix, which is to allow public comment on the application. This is the only part of the application that the county has any say over. It's mm-hmm. explicitly designed for the county to take a look at this site and say, do we want it or do we not want it? Mm-hmm. And what Story County is basically doing is just throwing open the door to any application. They've just sent a big message to any sort of big hog corporation, Mashoff Pork, Christensen, any of these guys. We're open for business. We're going to work with you in whatever way possible to get this thing passed. So please, flood our county with as many factory farms as you possibly can. And that's what really worries me. I grew up just south of Ames, mm-hmm. out in the country. There's no protection from my parents who still live there from one of these things moving in next door and destroying their quality of life.
Thank you. So we're really talking about quality of life, health in Story County. Is that correct?
Well, that's one huge thing. I mentioned the economic and the environmental side of things as well, but the health part and the quality of life part are huge, huge parts of it as well.
I think you're telling us what motivates you mm-hmm. to get into these situations or to confronting these issues. Can you just describe a little bit what really drives you? And
there's a couple things. For one thing, I've been working at this job for several years now, and I've met people all across the state who they get this they get a letter in the mail, or they see some construction activity and they find out that this a factory farm is moving next door, and they have to really, it's really an uphill battle to get this thing stopped. They have no legal recourse to have any say in what's going to happen to their property. So, you know, just the personal connections I've made with so many of these people, you know, they're very close friends of mine now. Personally, I care very deeply about giving them some democratic voice in this process. Kind of in a more abstract way, you know, what I see in many, many parts of our society is kind of corporate power running amok, you know, whether it's money in politics, you know, these huge super PACs running our democracy, whether it's Wall Street, you know, controlling the economy, anything like that. You know, I see this, the factory farm issue, as really on a continuum with other problems. And, you know, it's really the most egregious example of corporate power winning out over what's actually important to people here. They're making millions of dollars off the backs of everyday Iowans, and that just isn't right in my mind.
Thank you for joining us, Evan.
Yeah,
and thanks
for
letting us know the work you're doing and why you do it. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Yeah, thanks.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. That was Evan Berger with ICCI speaking on behalf of opponents of the current proposal for a CAFO, which was made by Lucas Chemland, east of Ames, and it was approved unanimously by the County Board of Supervisors. Approved is maybe a conditional word. It was recommended. Really, it's up to the Department of Natural Resources to ultimately approve or disapprove of this project.
If you didn't care, what happened to me? And I didn't care, for you. We would zigzag away through the boredom and pain, occasionally glancing up through the rain, wondering which of the buggers to blame. And watching for pigs on the wing, so I don't feel alone on the weight of the stone. Now that I've found somewhere safe to bury my bone, and any fool knows a dog needs a home. A shelter from pigs on the wing.
And we are fortunate to have the chair of the Story County Supervisors with us here, Mr. Paul Toot. Thank you, Mr. Toot, for coming.
Thank you.
Mr. Toot chaired the hearing. And our goal here at KHOI is to build community through communication, and we aim to really use our time here in the studio to promote sincere and open discourse. Thank you for participating in coming, and it's an honor to have you here with us.
Thank you very much.
We've had Supervisor Wayne Clinton on our station, but I believe this is your first time in the studio?
You're correct, it is.
Okay.
Well, I think we're glad to have you here because obviously this is an issue that has generated a lot of concern in the county, and I know you've spoken on it many times before as well. And so we've heard a lot of concern expressed this morning about just the process, and this would be a great opportunity for you to explain how, as a supervisor, you work through this process.
Sure.
And come up with your decision.
Sure.
Also, Paul, since we do have the opportunity to have you here today, would you like to start out with any updates in general about what's happening in the county?
Certainly. We're just finishing up our fiscal year. June 30th would be the end of this fiscal year. Since 2010, when I first came on the board, myself and Rick Sanders were both elected in 2010. and started on the board in 2011. Since that time, we've been able to, through some changes in the budgeting practices at Story County, we've been able to cut $6 million of actual spending from the county budget. And we've been able to do that without sacrificing services to the citizens here in Story County. We've also been able to lower the county's portion of the property tax levy. The county portion of that in 2010 was about $5.85 per $1,000 of valuation on your property. And as of July 1st of this year, that's going to go down to $5.39. So that's about a 7% decrease in the overall county portion of your property tax bill. Valuations, we're fortunate in Story County that property tax or that property valuations have increased. So if you look at your property tax statement, you say, well, my taxes haven't gone down. Your county portion of that tax has gone down, but the valuation of your property has gone up. And the county portion on that statement is a small portion in comparison to what most school districts are. So we're pretty proud of the work we've done here in Story County. We continue to move forward. We're excited for the prospects of a new year, and I think, you know, the overall direction that Story County's taken in the last 4 years.
We hope to have many more reports from you here at KHOI.
Thank you.
So if we may, we'd like to talk about the proposed hog confinement operation.
Sure.
Did we start where Evan left off? He was questioning really the role that he was essentially saying that the Story County supervisors were more taking on the role of facilitators instead of arbitrators.
Well, if I could, I'll give you a little background. I don't know if anybody's talked about this. I know Mark was on a little bit earlier, Margaret James. But in 2002, the legislature passed the law that said that the counties can have some input in the placement and the siting of these feeding operations. And this includes operations that are of 1,000 or more animal units, and that doesn't necessarily mean that animal unit is based on the size of a cow. So the state figures that a pig is about 4/10 of an animal unit. So one animal unit is at about 2.5 pigs is what it amounts to. So if you've got 1,000 animal unit, that facility can hold up to 2,500 hogs. So the matrix process, which went into effect in 2003, actually is a scoring system I'm just going to read this right off the DOT's website to try to explain this. A matrix is a scoring system that was designed to evaluate the siting and manure management practices of proposed permitted operations based on environmental risks and community impacts. The matrix was required by law. Senate filed the 79th General Assembly in 2002. Developed by a 10-member technical advisory committee and was designated in the legislation. The committee met from June through September in 2002 and reached a consensus on 44 factors addressing air quality, water quality, and community impacts. After public input and revisions on the proposed matrix, the Environmental Protection Commission set a passing score on the matrix of 440 points of the total available. Producers must pass 25% of the available points. And what that does is it sets the bar a little higher for producers that choose to use this matrix. A county has to pass a construction evaluation permit. A construction evaluation resolution every January in order for this process to take place. If the county doesn't pass that resolution, then there's no input at all from the county as far as the permit process for the construction. So Story County routinely passes that resolution every January, giving us the opportunity to score the matrix along with the producer.
So the matrix essentially then is your statement our statement as Story County as to whether we consider this project acceptable to us or not.
Correct. And we have to, like Evan said, the producer can choose the 25 areas that they want to score themselves on. And the county has to score those same areas. The county can't arbitrarily pick another group of questions to score them on. They have to score the same criteria that the producer did.
Mm-hmm.
And also the DNR has to agree with the county's evaluation of that master mm-hmm. matrix in order for the permit to be approved.
We spoke earlier this morning with Mary James, who was with the Department of Environmental Safety.
Correct, Margaret Jane. She's
Margaret
our Environmental Health Director, correct.
For some reason I keep calling her the wrong name. She gave it a rather low score, and actually, when we spoke with her on the phone, stopped short of saying she felt this really was a healthy project.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on that? She gave what could only be described as a lukewarm
right.
Analysis of safety here.
Prior to about 2011 or 12, the scoring process was done by the planning, at that time the Planning and Zoning Department. It was done by Lee and Harder. The thought was that this may be better suited under the Environmental Health Department. So we made that change and asked Margaret if she would score these matrices for us, and she's agreed to do that. I'm not going to question what Margaret's how she arrived at that score. She did give it a passing score. There was a couple of points on there that were in question. I know one of the points that was in question was whether or not MASHOFF was considered to be a partner in this operation.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, ICCI believed that they were, due to the fact that they helped Evan fill out the – or not Evan, but Luke Chumlin fill out the application. We actually had asked – Margaret had asked the DNR counsel if we should consider MASHOFF a partner. His response was go back to the application. If MASHOFF is not listed on the application, they are not considered a partner.
Okay, wait a minute. MASHOFF is the
MASHOFF is the producer franchise that's going to supply the animals.
So this is essentially a franchise of sorts of
MASHOFF. I guess you can look at it this way. It's my understanding that Luke Chumlin is going to provide the funds to construct mm-hmm. the building.
Right.
He's doing that with MASHOFF's help in order to get the I guess you could say – he's doing that with MASHOFF's assistance to go through the process of filling out the application.
Mm-hmm.
There are some technical points to that application that anybody that is filling it out would need assistance with. I think MASHOFF offers that service or that it makes that available to people that are going to contract with them to feed their animals. That's basically what Lucas is doing. Lucas is going to be feeding MASHOFF's pigs in his building.
Right.
Luke mm-hmm. owns the building.
Okay. Even though the score was relatively low, and Margaret has expressed some concerns. You did ultimately pass it. Why did you go that way instead of the other way?
Well, there was some question on the on whether or not the MASHOFF was a partner. I believe the three of us decided that we were going to follow the advice from the DNR Council that if MASHOFF was not listed on the application, then they are not a partner in that. Even taking away, I believe that was a 30-point question. Even taking that away, they were above the 440 points required. The other point that was a sticking point was the site distance from the Indian Creek.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the DNR requires that they're a minimum of 500 feet from the creek. I think Lucas is 520 or 530 feet away from that creek. There was some concern that during a high water event that's, you know, the possibility exists that building would be swamped. We took a look at the FEMA floodplain maps. That building is not in the floodplain. The building itself does not sit at ground level. The pit that the manure is stored in is underneath the building, and that sits up several feet off of grade. So we looked at those factors and tried not to be subjective when we looked at those. We looked at the criteria.
What does that mean, try not to be subjective?
We looked at the criteria that's required on the matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Margaret is the one that scores those for mm-hmm. for the Board of Supervisors. The board can have anybody score those. I think there's several counties in Iowa who the supervisors themselves actually go out and conduct the evaluation. But I guess what the bottom line was is that the overall score was above what was required. I believe she scored it at 445 points. There's 440 points required. to pass the matrix, if you will. The board did not vote to approve the permit. What the board did was vote to send their recommendation to the DNR that the construction permit be approved.
Now, you're with the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority as well?
Correct.
So you are aware that water is not just a flooding issue. There's leakage from pipes.
Exactly.
Matter getting into the water other ways. It's interesting because I'm hearing from you also a relatively lukewarm assessment of how safe this actually is.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you. The DNR sets down some requirements when these facilities are constructed. There's a certain type of cement that they have to use. They have to put the rebars a certain distance apart in these when they're constructing the pits. It has to be certain thickness, a certain weight of concrete has to be used. But that's all the DNR does. They tell the producer or the construction company, this is the guidelines you have to meet, and then that's it. They don't send anybody out to the site to check on these. Locally, we don't have any authority to go out and look at that. Now, Luke Chalman did agree to let us come out anytime we wanted during the construction process or during the life of this facility to check groundwater or check whatever we thought we needed to do to make sure that it was a safe facility. The producer is required to put a tile below the level of the footings in the ground, an inspection tile, with I believe it's at least one, if not two, inspection ports that the producer is required to check these on a regular basis to make sure that if there's any manure at all in that tile, that indicates that he has a leak in the pit. And he's to shut the tile. There's an actual gate that that you can shut the tile off, and he's to take the appropriate actions that that he's required to do by the state in the event of a leak. The problem is that locally we have no authority to go in and inspect that facility. The DNR does not require any inspections. They typically pump those pits out once a year and apply that manure to a preset number of acres that they have to file the application with the DNR. That manure is injected, and then it's what's called incorporated. They'll run a disc or some sort of a tillage device over it within a couple of days after it's injected. But the DNR, and they'll be the first to tell you that they don't have the manpower to come out and make sure that everybody is doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's all on the honor system. And for anybody not to have any concerns about that would be turning a blind eye to it.
Right. Well, it's interesting because we got a lukewarm assessment from the Department of Environmental Safety. We got some real concerns of neighbors and the ICCI.
Right.
And again, now when you speak of it, I also hear, you know, a relatively lukewarm assessment of what you see as the safety and the ability to actually monitor safety over time. Ultimately, it begs the question, why unanimously pass this? Why not put up some red flags? Because ultimately, this isn't about matrix or technicalities. It's about the safety and quality of life in the county. Why not?
Sure.
Why wouldn't the county board of supervisors put up a red flag by saying, well, we're not going to recommend this unanimously?
I don't think we had any reason not to. They were over the minimum score. They scored 445 points. And for any of us to sit on the board of supervisors and say, well, they're over the minimum points, but we don't like this facility, so we're gonna suggest that they don't approve it. The DNR is going to take a look at that, and they're gonna look at the matrix, and they say, well, they scored the 445 points. What are you basing this on? We can't base it on the fact that we may be philosophically opposed to these type of facilities.
So you're saying you feel you really didn't have any choice but to pass it.
I don't feel that we did. We've passed the construction resolution. That gives us the ability to look at these a little bit closer than some counties that don't pass that resolution. And if we're going to look at them, we're going to have to look at them the way we're supposed to.
Okay.
If he scored 445 points, or what Margaret thought was 445 points on that matrix, what are we going to base our recommendation to the DNR on that they disapproved that?
So what about the issue that Evan brought up, that actually it passed the matrix because, in a sense, the farmer was helped to get across the finish line, and that the county kind of actually facilitated instead of judged?
Okay. I guess you can look at that in a couple of different ways. Had he not passed, had the score not passed, or had he have known, and I believe that there would be no point in blindsiding the applicant at a public hearing to tell him that, no, you didn't score enough points. He would have been advised that his score was too low, and he was advised that his score was too low, and at any point he can pull his application. When he pulled his application, if he wanted to start the process over, and like I tried to make the point in our public hearing, in 30 or 60 days, we'd be right back where we are today. So was it a bad thing for the county to step in and say, here's the areas that we have concerns. We would like you to give us more documentation on these specific points. And that's exactly what happened. And that happened on Sunday and Monday of Memorial Day. When the courthouse was closed or the administration building was closed, Margaret came in on her own time, worked with Lucas to get some documentation that she needed in order to satisfy herself that this, in fact, was done correctly. Mm-hmm. So you can look at it a couple of different ways. And Evan had some concerns about the open meeting. We had our civil counsel, Jessica Reynolds, who's a first assistant county attorney. We worked closely with her over the weekend. She said we did nothing improper. We're not required to hold a public hearing for this matter. We choose to hold a public hearing to give the citizens in Story County the opportunity to give their input. Mm-hmm. And it was almost a 3-hour public hearing mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, I guess you could say that the county helped facilitate that process. Had we not, and had his score been below the minimum, he would have had the opportunity to pull his application. The process would have stopped at that point. He could have refiled his application, and in 30 days or 60 days or whatever the time limit would, we'd have been back exactly where we were 2 or 3 weeks ago.
So you chose not to go through the process that way?
Exactly.
Any last words?
No, I guess I do. It's a complicated matter. You hear a lot of people talk about local control. The state took that away from the county. We were prohibited from passing any type of zoning ordinance or any type of ordinance that restricts any type of agricultural operation. And this is as close as the county can get to weighing in on these matters. And that's what we're trying to do.
You feel good about this application?
I do. He met the requirement. He was above the requirement. He scored mm-hmm. 445 points. It's not what they scored themselves at. I believe that initially they scored themselves at 515 points. Had he scored 300 or 435 points, we would not have recommended that the DNR approve the permit. But he is over the minimum requirement. Okay. It doesn't say that you have to be 25 or 50 points over. It just says you have to score a minimum of 440 points, and they did that.
Okay. But if I hear correctly, you do share a little bit of the concerns about the water.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. There's no oversight from the state. There's no follow-up from the DNR on these operations. It's simply left on the producer to make sure that he does what he says he's going to do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been talking about the recent approval of a 4,600-head hog confinement operation in Milford Township, just a few miles northeast of Ames. We first spoke with Margaret Janes, head of the Department of Environmental Health in Story County. Then we spoke with Evan Berger of Iowa CCI, an opponent of the operation. And finally, we spoke with Mr. Paul Tu, chair of the numerous boards in our county, including Board of the Story County Supervisors.
At the beginning of the hour, we visited with Jason Ergoblast, who was reading from the Creative Works on Thursday at Della Vita Wine Bar in downtown Ames. Links to all of our guests and their contact information will be published on our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org.
We've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Tom Beal. Cynthia McClure and Greta Anderson provided assistance, and Richard Morrison engineered the show. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards, as usual, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team, please call us at 292-2878 or stop by the studio at 410 Douglas Avenue.
Your participation as the listener, as always, is what makes KHOI possible, as well as your generous donations. Thank you for listening to us, and see you again on the radio.